We start hour number two, restating the top of the show, number one topic, which is that Franklin County Common Pleas Court Judge Michael Holbrook has blocked the institution into law of House Bill 68, which was the law that bans transgender surgeries for minors and preserves girls' sports for girls. I've encouraged you to call Judge Holbrook's chambers and let him know what you think of his decision. Be civil, don't be profane, but state in clear terms that you think he has let down the youth of the state of Ohio. His number in his chambers is 614-525-3664, 614-525-3664. In the last hour, I've contacted a couple people who work at the courthouse in matters of the judiciary. One of them said that they've never gotten a good vibe from being around Judge Holbrook. Another said that what I've told you before is he barely won re-election for the third time and that hopefully he's termed out. And another said that he's riding out his last term and he does what's expedient. Well, this is definitely what's expedient because he didn't plan on people calling his chambers and protesting this because the people who are for this kind of trans nonsense are always the loudest, but also a minority. Gary Click knows that. Gary is a representative in the Ohio State House who led the way with Jenna Powell on getting this enacted into law. Gary, I'm sorry you guys have to continue to fight this, but I know you're not surprised by it.
Not surprised at all, Bruce. Hey, it's great to be on with you. Thanks for being a champion on great causes like the SAFE Act and Save Women Sports. This is completely expected. You know, we're not focused on the mile markers, but rather on the finish line. And we're going to get this done.
Good. And I know you have the support of Dave Yost, the Attorney General. I mean, the Supreme Court in the state of Ohio, thankfully, is aligned such that I think we will eventually get this done. But I look around other states. Arkansas had another judge did the same thing that Michael Holbrook did and blocked this. And here in Ohio, one of the things that they're citing as a way to block it, and I know you guys knew this going in, was the combining of the SAFE Act and the Save Women's Sports Act into one law. They're saying is, oh, you can't do that. Everything has to be done single subject. What's your view of that and why you guys decided to strategize in that particular way by combining the two endeavors?
Well, you're right. And there's two answers to that. You know, first of all, Judge Holbrook said, and I just finished reading his statement this morning, but he said the only way the SAFE Act could have passed was to roll in Save Women Sports.
Yeah.
And that's just, you know, I want to be respectful, so I'll be careful how I phrase this, but that's just not the way it works. You don't roll, you know, strong bills into weak bills to get them to pass. If anything, you're going to roll a weak bill into a strong bill to get it to pass. So the assumption that, you know, if the SAFE Act was really weak and Save Women's Sports was really strong, we would have wrote SAFE Act into Save Women's Sports. But the reality is they were both strong bills and they were a single subject. The single subject is this, is that sex is binary and sex is immutable. You can't change sex. And that means that we should not be experimenting on young people. We should not be committing malpractice by permanently and irreversibly damaging a child's body through drugs or through surgery. And it also means that boys cannot play on girls' sports. You know, this is not about being transgender. It's about being male or female. That is a single subject that handles both of these bills. And it was simply more expedient to put them together because they are a single subject, not because one couldn't pass without the other. They were complementary bills, and they work well together.
Okay, so Gary Click, our guest, District 88 representative in the Ohio House, you say this was not unexpected, so you obviously know and have a game plan for how you're going to respond to this activist ruling by Judge Michael Holbrook in Franklin County Common Pleas Court. What's the next step to get this actually enacted into law and to start protecting minors in Ohio from these kinds of nonsensical and damaging procedures?
Well, we've passed the ball on to our great Attorney General, David Yost, and so there's not much that is within, you know, my hands to actually do at this point except to trust him, and I have full confidence in him. But we know there's going to be the hearing. I'm working on a second press release. My first one was just when I heard the news but didn't have the details. So I'm working on that to help educate the public on this. But next thing is the full hearing, and we'll see what happens there. Hopefully, Judge Holbrook has an awakening, and he hears and listens to the facts as presented. I don't know him. I've read some of the Google reviews on him and heard some of the same things that you just described. We'll see what happens. We'll see if he listens. But this has really been the history of Bills, like you know, Robin Lundstrom. She and I have had some great conversations, and they anticipated this. In fact, they were asking for it because they knew the lower court judge would rule against them, and they were asking him to speed it up and hurry up and get it done so they could get to the upper courts where sanity would prevail. And so I expected this. I expected, you know, some road bumps along the way. This is par for the course. We anticipate it's not been an easy journey at all so far. It's been a hard and a laborious journey, but it's been a labor of love because we love kids and we're going to protect kids in Ohio. And, you know, right now, Attorney General Yost has the football, and he's going to carry it in for the touchdown.
Yeah, let's hope so. Gary Klick is our guest, District 88, if you want to know where that is in the state of Ohio. It's a little bit east of Bowling Green and Findlay. It encompasses Tiffin and Fremont and the areas east and west of those cities in north, kind of west central Ohio, I would say. Gary, you know the dynamics in Ohio. You know the histrionics when any bill like this is proposed. It takes courage to propose it. Where's the lobbying effort? Where's the funding coming from on something like this? Because clearly, when you have a law like this that is opposed by the governor, which is that's deplorable, but you had the legislative muscle in the Senate and in the House to override this veto. There's clearly support throughout the state of Ohio for this law. But there's also a very loud and very well-financed group of people who object to it. Where is that coming from? What can you tell us about the opposition that you face on this and where it originates?
Well, there's a lot of money in the LGBTQ community, you know, places like Equality Ohio, Kaleidoscope, and a lot of their allies. You know, and then this, just quite frankly, it's the Children's Hospital Association.
Yeah.
And, you know, and they have worked very hard. This was, I think, I number six, I might have sent that to you, the sixth most lobbied on bill in Ohio, this General Assembly. Last General Assembly was the most downloaded bill in the United States, where people were downloading this bill to see what was in it. So this bill has caught the attention, national attention. It's caught the attention of, you know, President Trump, Vivek Ramaswamy, you know, Ron DeSantis, all the candidates, you know, before the primary was decided, weighed in on this bill. It has a national movement, national attention, because it makes common sense, but yet common sense isn't so common anymore. And the hospitals, this is big money for the hospitals.
Yeah.
They deny it, but we know it's true. And they've worked very hard, and that's where most of the money has come in so far, to work against this. And they want to continue, but you know, I just shared on social media a post, an article that was written by one of our local physicians who said, you know, he doesn't recognize his profession anymore. You know, he talks about, you know, in COVID, where they wanted to give vaccines to babies who are not at all at risk from this, and then he says, and now what they're doing to children, he says, I hardly recognize this profession that I see. It's not the profession that I started with. And he totally talks about how the AAP and the APA and all those places, how they just are bought and paid for on these kinds of things instead of following the science. And he said, we have to follow the science, not the stigmatisms of the left.
Yeah, you're so right on that. I mean, the countries in Europe that have tried this, were ahead of us on trying it, have now abandoned it. They recognize how damaging it is to kids. I'm heartened and strengthened by the fact that you and others in the State House are willing to fight for it. And I assume you are also involved with House Bill 183, which would basically preserve the bathrooms on the basis of biological sex. I mean, these initiatives, as you well know, Gary, are always presented as bans on transgender kids. They're never presented as protecting the psychological, mental, and physical well-being of girls who just want to have their private spaces and don't want to have those spaces violated by the presence of boys.
Well, the headlines are atrocious, and the way they write the headlines, the way they write the stories, it is a complete bias. Well, you know, I'm not anti anyone. I want everyone. I want to protect kids that have, you know, mental health distresses like this. This is a mental health issue. I was at an event last night back home, and was talking to someone I know, family I know, and told me that, you know, he now told me that his child, a 17-year-old child, is going through this. And he told me that with tears in his eyes, you know, and I know this child, and I prayed with him, and I said, hey, you know, look, we're just going to put this in God's hands. That's something I do as a pastor. You know, but in my role as a legislator, I said, let's follow the science. Let's protect these kids from this social phenomenon, the social contagion, which is what it is in 90% of the cases. You know, real gender dysphoria exists, but most of it is ROGD, rapid onset gender dysphoria. It's a social contagion. And these kids are being permanently and irrevocably harmed by this experiment yeah. on our kids. How dare they do that?
Gary, I appreciate so much your work, and thanks for coming on and talking with us about it.
My privilege, Bruce. Keep up the great work.
It is time for Today in Crazy. And let's chat about the disparity, shall we, in salaries in professional basketball. Caitlin Clark, Iowa, a phenomenon, took the nation by storm. What was I looking at yesterday? The television ratings for something were like 9 million. It was some kind of a sporting event. I forget what it was, 9 million. And that was half of the ratings on women's basketball. I think it was for the first round of the NBA playoffs, a first round NBA playoff game. Now, NBA playoffs typically garner, at least before they went all in with BLM, huge television ratings. So why would the salaries of women's basketball players be so paltry compared to the salaries of NBA players? Now, look this up today. What do you think LeBron James gets paid per game to play for the Los Angeles Lakers? $542,378 per game LeBron James gets paid, okay? I don't know if he's the highest paid player in the NBA. Probably not. Maybe Steph Curry's the highest paid player in the NBA or somebody else. But at any point, he's paid more than $500,000 per game. Now, what will Caitlin Clark, who has brought more eyeballs to the women's game than any player in history and is their best chance to maintain those eyeballs on women's basketball, what is she going to be paid? She was just the number one pick in the NBA draft. Well, she's going to be paid $338,000. Per game? No. For the next 4 years. That's her salary, locked in with the WNBA. Now, she can make more off endorsements, but so can LeBron, right? So why is LeBron paid $542,000 per game and Caitlin Clark paid $338,000 for 4 years? It's a little thing called capitalism, okay? Capitalism, good. Capitalism has served our country very well. Free markets, supply, demand. Capitalism, very good. The reason why, and the reason I'm bringing this up is not because you don't understand it, but because our dopey president doesn't understand it. 18 hours ago, whoever handles Joe Biden's phone, because I'm sure he can't do it, tweeted this under his presidential account. Women in sports continue to push new boundaries and inspire us all. But right now we're seeing that even if you're the best, women are not paid their fair share. It's time we give our daughters the same opportunities as our sons and ensure women are paid what they deserve. Well, you know what? Fool, they are paid what they deserve based upon free market capitalism and its principles. Am I saying that women are not worth as much as men? No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that the market has determined that WNBA basketball is not the draw for fans, for advertisers, for the engines that make the sport run and make it profitable. As yet, the WNBA has not generated the revenue streams that the NBA has. And that is why women's basketball players are paid far less. Poor J.C. Sheldon, very nice young lady, know her family, Dublin Kaufman. Great shout out to her dad, her mom, great people, brother A.J., daughter Emmy, fantastic people. J.C. Sheldon got picked fifth overall in Dallas. She's going to make about 70 grand a year. I hope there's some nice kids on that team because JC's a definite nice kid. I hope there's some nice kids on that team that JC can room with because otherwise she's going to be living in challenging circumstances, shall we say, on a $70,000 salary in a big city like Dallas, Texas. And this also, by the way, underscores the inanity of women's basketball players currently in the WNBA snarking on Caitlin Clark coming to the WNBA, bringing eyeballs with her to the WNBA, which is a sport that nobody cared about and may probably still not care about once she joins the WNBA. But this is inane that Joe Biden says, oh, we got to, women got to be paid their fair share. They are paid their fair share. This same economic blather comes out of the White House all the time, not just about women's basketball players, but about life in general. Here is the identity hire, the intersectionality hire, the diversity hire of all time, Corinne Jean-Pierre, trying to explain economic policy to people at the White House.
The way we see the economy is very different than the way Republicans see the economy and how we make sure we have an economy that works for all. Making sure that the wealthiest among us, the billionaires and corporations, pay their fair share, we believe is the way to go here, not putting that burden on everyday Americans.
If I could get Peter Ducey to ask one question at the White House, one question, it would be, hey, Corinne Jean-Pierre, in light of the fact that you say rich people do not pay their fair share, what percentage of taxes? I'm going to Google this right now. And Google, obviously, woke. I should duck-duck-go it, but I'm going to Google it. What percentage of federal taxes are paid by the top 1% of wage earners? That's the question I would love Peter Ducey to ask her when she spouts that nonsense. The answer is 46% of federal taxes are paid by the top 1% of tax earners. 46%, according to Google, is probably higher than that. Okay? But, oh, they're not paying their fair share. Here we go. One more time. Let's hear it. Let's hear your nonsense.
Republicans see the economy and how we make sure we have an economy that works for all. Making sure that the wealthiest among us, the billionaires and corporations, pay their fair share.
1%. Top 1% of wage earners pay 46% of the taxes. How much do they need to pay, KJP? How much before it would be fair? This kind of lie, let's just call it what it is. It's an utter lie, is meant to create a wedge in our culture and pit rich against poor, white against black, to divide us. He was going to be the uniter in chief, right? Instead, in every single way possible, he tries to glom on to something that is not controversial, that does not carry with it inherent division, and he wedges in his political lust for power to create controversy where there should be none. He could get up there and explain capitalism to people and why it's a great system, but instead, he'd rather divide and lie.